He's like, dude, he's like, alcohol was so much worse for me than heroin ever was. Yeah. And it was never a problem prior to heroin.
Somebody told me, like, I heard this saying, like, if you're worried, if you messed your kids up, don't worry. You did. Ladies and gentlemen, we have an amazing episode. Well, it's pretty good. All right. Coming for you. The Most High Show. We got Adam Miller in the studio. He's brought a guest. Alex Lightning is in the building. We got an in-studio audience. We got Dylan on the ones and twos. Leslie's doing quality control. I'm your host, Christian. And check it out. This is The Most High Show.
Welcome to The Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is The Most High Show.
Alex Lightning. That's like a superhero name. Is that the name
Ride
your mama
lightning.
Gave you?
What's that?
That's the name your mama gave you?
Yeah, my daddy.
Your daddy. All right. So there's a commonality between the two of you, and that commonality, that thread, is no longer bound. So for somebody who's listening and they don't know what no longer bound is, you want to, Adam, just kind of tell them a little bit about what no longer bound
is. Sure. Yeah. So no longer bound is a year-long, nonprofit, Christ-centered, residential addiction treatment center for adult men.
Nice.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah. Okay.
But that's what it is. It's a year-long program, a Christ-centered program with inner healing. We have a transition phase for the last 4 months, which is basically sober living gives guys an opportunity to walk out what they've learned and utilize the tools that they've been equipped with to build a new life for themselves in recovery.
Okay. So they're not just going through this year-long process and then leaving right away. There's a transition phase of it for them to start working, leaving property, starting to reintegrate into society and all that stuff.
Yeah, and it's it's interesting because after, you know, the inner healing is extremely deep, and it's usually people talking about things they were content going to the grave with, and those things get talked about, and guys just get really freed up by the 8 month mark. And you know, I was in this boat too, where I'm like, I got this, like, I'm good, without much introduction back into the real world. And so it's really interesting, when I was a transition counselor, guys would get to that point and they would spend a weekend at home for the first time that they're gone for, you know, 48 hours or so.
The first time in eight months that they've left the property for 48 hours to go hang with family.
Yeah. And then now mind you, most of the guys were like myself. They had never been sober for any length of time as an adult. And so their idea is they're going to go home and everything's going to be awesome and chill. And they realize, like, whoa, like, that was really stressful. And they're actually, some of the guys would tell me, like, I'm really glad that I have to come back, because I didn't have to tell my mom, like, this is kind of a lot and I kind of don't want to be here. I could say, oh, nope. They want me back.
Yeah.
And it gave them like an escape route. But it was cool to have one foot in the world and one foot back in like a safe spiritual environment to process this difference in the reality versus what they expected things to be like.
Yeah. Do you guys do any kind of preparation for that with the family, working with the families or anything?
Yes. You know, I think where a lot of treatment falls short is the family. A lot of times a guy will come in and he probably perceives himself as less healthy than family members because his problems are very overt and, you know, out in the public eye. And so he comes in and goes to treatment and he's slowly getting healthier and healthier. And he goes home to a family that has not done any healing. And it's very hard to maintain recovery when it's not this group effort to heal.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're really intentional with family recovery. They meet on the weekends. We do some bigger things, like kind of quarterly, to get the family healed up too.
Yeah.
Because it's rarely just the guy that is unhealthy. There's always, to some degree, there's unhealthiness usually in the family with codependency or enabling or poor boundaries or, you know, a lot of criticism. And
or some people be like, oh, well, your problem was heroin. You can drink, right? It's not a big deal because they're not, if they're not made aware and informed about the disease or the.
I think that's kind of a universal thing that people tend to think early on in recovery.
Yeah.
Well, this is my problem. I could do that.
Right.
I kind of thought that actually at one point in treatment. And I met a guy. I was doing hours on the weekend with my class at the thrift store. And I met a guy who was an alumni that came in. And he was doing community service, and I was like, you know, is this from, like, did they suspend your probation while you were in treatment, and then you had to do community service afterwards? He's like, oh, no. I'm like, what happened? He's like, well, I came to No Longer Bound because of heroin. He's like, it was really bad. I come to No Longer Bound, get a lot of healing, and he's like, somewhere in my mind, I start thinking, well, like, heroin is my problem. I never really liked alcohol or had problems with it.
Yeah.
I could do that. Flash forward, he's in an apartment with his girlfriend. They get in a verbal altercation. She calls the cops. The cops show up, knock on the door. He goes to the other side of the door and tells them that nobody's here. He's like, dude, he's like, alcohol was so much worse for me than heroin ever was.
Yeah.
And it was never a problem prior to heroin. And that's where I was like, okay, could I drink socially and keep it together? Maybe. Am I willing to risk everything to find out? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
And if I'm looking to escape in the first place, that's kind of an indicator that something's off.
Right. Yeah. We need some healthy escapes, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, Alex, you did you do a transition?
I did. At that point in time, it was a 10-month program with 2 months of transition, and I actually ended up staying an additional month, so I did 3 months in transition while I was there.
Do you remember your first 48-hour pass? Where did you go? What was that like?
First 48-hour pass, if I remember right.
It was probably your cousin, right?
Yeah, that's right. I went out and I got pizza, just went out with him. I can't remember where we ended up going, but yeah, I was going out with him and getting out and about. Pretty sure it was him and I think his girlfriend Maddie that we went out and hung out.
All right, so it was just chill.
Yeah.
And you and your cousin are cool, and it was no stress
or... Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Now, your cousin was instrumental in helping you get in.
Yes.
So we're going to go back to that in a minute. So they do this transition thing, and then after the end of that, then they, I guess, quote-unquote, graduate.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, but how long has No Longer Bound been around? It's been around for a while, right?
Since 1991.
91.
I was six.
That was the year I was born.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, which is cool because that's where I was like, man, like even from the year that I was born, God was already forming a spot for me to go to get, you know, get healed.
Damn.
Yeah.
Okay.
He knew. He's like, ooh.
This one.
So, you know, first off, I love No Longer Bound, but I think when the conversation comes up with No Longer Bound, it's the changes that have happened over the years, right? Because when it started... It was a very different place.
Yeah.
Right? And it's made some changes along the way. How can we talk about that in a way that's edifying? Because I think, like, you know, when I could work with, like, a company, if I was doing branding, when I used to do branding with people, one of the things we would do is we would create this list of positive market associations, but then we'd also create a list of negative associations, right? So any brand or any entity in the marketplace, there's these negative perceived things that people have on it, right? And so some of the things that, you know, I've heard just from people is that, you know, it's not what it used to be, right? I'm sure you've heard that from a lot of people. Can we talk a little bit about that evolution?
Yeah, and I think that's a good thing. You know, No Longer Bound was a ministry from pure ministry from 91 till I think we started implementing clinical components around 2018.
Oh, so a long time.
It was the same way for a long time. And I think some of the, you know, negative feedback that I've heard about the program in the past, it was extremely successful for people. However, there was kind of a dogmatic approach to things, and that generally didn't include AA or NA or any of the 12-step recovery areas. And, you know, we kind of came to the conclusion where it's like, hey, this is what's available for people when they leave treatment. Yeah. And like, yes, Jesus is a foundation for recovery, especially at No Longer Bound. But that doesn't mean that 12-step recovery isn't great supplementally to that, or that they feed each other.
Right, yeah.
You know, but the reality is that's what's available for people. It's free. It's everywhere. There's not really a good excuse to not be involved in it.
Yeah, some level at least.
And it's just a great, I mean, we're all about No Longer Bound's take is not necessarily on, our win isn't really sobriety. It's lasting intimacy with God, self, and others. Well, others are going to be people that are like-minded or that they have a similar goal in mind of lasting recovery, a deepening relationship with God and themselves and other people. 12-step meetings are what's available to meet people like that.
Did they tell you that's what the mission was, intimacy with God and others, when you first walked in?
Yeah, definitely.
First day?
Well, for the first week I was passed out in the bed, rigging in there, coming down off of stuff. But yeah, once I came in around Christmas time, and so it was kind of an odd time. If I was like, what? This is, what's going on, you know, with us, everybody on break and stuff. But once we did start getting into the program, yeah, that's what it was about. First it was, Bill was my counselor, and us going into, you know, sitting there talking about that. That was the end goal, but they were very good about keeping the short-sighted, you know, because as coming in fresh off the street, I mean, it's hard for us to see that long game. But yes, they did say, this is where we're wanting to get you to, but this is where we're at.
So when they tell you that after that first week, what's your honest reaction to that as the end goal of like where ideally you're going to end up?
I mean, when we first started getting in class, coming in fresh, hot off the street and everything like that, it was just, I was like, all right, whatever. I was like, you tell all this stuff to me. But man, did I believe it? No. But that's where, the biggest thing was for me, was the people there, the people, the staff there, the love that they had. That's, I could sense that. That's a real palpable thing that you can sense with people. And even being as disconnected from God and myself, because, you know, I'd shown myself, you know, coming in there, that's a big problem. You know, I've seen with people in addiction, everything, you know, not only have we rejected God, rejected others, but we've also rejected ourselves. And so coming in there so disconnected like that, but being able to sense that, you know, I didn't know the people there, but I mean, the way that they operated and the way they carried themselves and the way that they approached us, I had some trust. I could at least do my best to take them at their word.
Yeah, so they were exhibiting this new way of life to you, right? Yeah. By showing you authenticity, transparency, all the things that come with being intimate, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You had to be showed it before you might even start to believe it.
Yeah, right? I mean, the fact that I could sit there with my counselor or whoever it was, other staff members there, and them open up and they talk to me about these things, I'm like, man, like, I get that. Like, and not just do we have an understanding, because, I mean, that's one of the biggest things there is, like, I mean, being able to sit there and just say that to somebody and not even really have to go into that much definition, just to be understood. And then in that, with that, see that not only am I understood, but like there they are and they're talking about how they've been doing it one day at a time. And I'm like, man.
Yeah. So they start implementing the 12-step. I mean, I don't know if they implement it in the program, but they start opening up, I guess,
to the concept of, hey, this is what's available. But really at the turn of going from ministry to clinical, you know, we introduce therapists to the environment. You know, almost everybody in addiction has some trauma, right? And being able to walk through that trauma with somebody that's trained in different modalities of unearthing those things and finding some healing is super important, and it's been great supplementally to our inner healing curriculum, which was the sauce, the bread and butter for No Longer Bound.
Right.
Since its inception to now.
And that stayed as a fundamental principle.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, isn't there like because my understanding is when you start introducing some of them clinical elements, that the clinical elements, how do they blend or work well? I mean, I guess we know how they work well with spirituality. Right, but from like an administrative level, my understanding was like these clinical approaches don't always include that. So how do you guys How were you guys beginning to reconcile that as these men are going through the program?
I think that's been a challenge, honestly. Like Alex kind of spoke to the relatability and mm-hmm. feeling seen mm-hmm. and heard and understood and no longer bound for forever, and it still is highly peer-to-peer. I mean, all the counselors are not only men in long-term recovery, but they're men that went through the program. So you're not going to get treatment with more relatability. But since 2018, these guys have also been getting certifications for, you know, CACs or CADCs.
Yeah, adding to the toolkit, right?
Right. And I think the fear originally was that, like, hey, we have a good thing, and this is working really well, and our success rates are way above the national average. I think the fear was that we were going to lose some of that sauce mm-hmm. by adding in clinical components and trauma-informed care, which is super important. And, you know, in the last, I don't know how many, 4 years, 5 years now, it has only made the counseling better.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the therapists are, I mean, they're all trained in it as well. And it gives the guys kind of a different perspective to not just have one counselor and that's your sole person yeah. that you're going to for that support. Now there's a second person.
Yeah.
So it doubled the amount of support and encouragement and challenging yeah. that they get.
But that's in addition to a lot of the classes and the group elements and right. all that group therapy.
Those are both one-on-one kind of things with the counselor yeah. once a week for an hour, therapist once a week for an hour, but there's also inner healing groups, you know, three times a week. You do group therapy once a week. And then there's different classes that we've implemented that are more, they're less deep like the inner healing and more practical, like healthy relationships or boundaries or conflict resolution, these things that are really applicable to
how
daily
not to
life.
Cuss out the cashier at McDonald's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not their fault, bro.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're just doing their job.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and I think that's like, you know, the industry of treating addiction is evolving still, currently evolving, right? And it's evolved from what it was, and they're starting to implement more things like trauma, understanding trauma, right? And understanding that there are these deep wounds that we've all experienced that somehow have contributed to or are the root to the way that we chose to live our lives and then ultimately how we got trapped in addiction, right?
Yeah, and I mean, No Longer Bound's kind of thing is we're addressing false beliefs. You know, we have the belief that, or the understanding, I guess, that our beliefs drive our thoughts, our feelings, our actions, our habits, our attitudes, and eventually it gets to what we call a stronghold, where it's these things that we do, and we've done them for so long that we don't even recognize that we're doing them. Mm. We're just, it yeah. falls into this blind spot zone.
Yeah. Right.
And these beliefs are formed, you know, usually in formative years as a child. Clinically, I think they would call them adverse childhood experiences or an ACE.
Yeah.
But it's an impactful moment from a significant source with a meaningful message.
Yeah.
Like you're a kid and, you know, you do something wrong and your dad yells at you and calls you a piece of crap. But like you're an idiot. You're not doing it right. You're never going to do anything right. So it's this impactful moment that as a kid, you know, maybe dad's just had a long day and he's just frustrated and it was just, you know, a slip. He doesn't really feel that way. But as a kid,
yeah,
you process that and it hits you hard.
Yeah.
And it's coming from the most significant source, you know, but when you're a kid, before you have any concept of God or anything like that, God as a kid are your parents. They're the ones there to care for you, to support you, to keep you alive, to encourage you.
Yeah.
That is what you have. So when one of those sources comes down on you really hard like that as a kid, there's a lot of weight and it can form these beliefs. It's like, Dad said I'm an idiot. Yeah. Maybe I'm dumb.
Yeah.
Maybe I am dumb. And then you stop thinking about it and all of a sudden it just drives your perception of yourself and the world and how you think. And
yeah. Every parent right now is like, ooh, damn. I mean, somebody told me, I heard this saying, like, if you're worried if you messed your kids up, don't worry, you did.
Yeah. And I mean, that's kind of no longer balanced. You know, a large point is that we have tried, and I think the world teaches us to get these needs met horizontally, right, through our relationships with people. And while that's an aspect of, like, a healthy life, if we're not getting those met primarily, like, vertically through God, we're not really able to give and receive those as well as we should be able to. And people aren't perfect.
Yeah.
You know, we're always going to fail each other. And so if we're 100% dependent on somebody else for those things, we're going to get shorthanded.
Yeah. Did you get all that when you were there? Yeah.
And then some.
And then some.
Yeah.
Well, tell me, Alex, tell me the most significant moment you can recall, like a turning point, a pivotal moment during your time when you were a resident there.
The biggest catalyst for me was realizing that these people, the staff, the volunteers there, how they loved me. Mm. That was one of the biggest things of seeing that, because I didn't love myself. I had no relationship with, like, I believed in God. I was saved whenever I was a kid, but I fell away, and I couldn't love myself.
Do you remember what that moment was?
It was actually at Christmas. I got there, December 20th, and then 5 days later, we're at these people's house that these volunteers, I say volunteers, I don't even remember the family, but they had us there, and they're throwing a huge dinner for us because there was just, I don't know, the guys that were there in the first, like, 30 days couldn't go out on pass or anything like that, so everyone that was there or wasn't going out for Christmas time was invited over to this house. I went over there, and they're feeding us, and they have us down in the basement, and we're hanging out, watching TV, like, their family, us, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, these people, like, the way they're treating us right now, it just blew my mind, and, like, there's that one part of me that's like, if they only knew who I was, like, but no, it didn't matter who I was, they loved me unconditionally, and then, like, that broke the ice for me, and then seeing that with the staff, seeing that with, like I said, the volunteers, like JCBC, just all the other people that come there, that give their time, that pour into that place. And that was the first catalyst for me of being like, okay, like being able to start stepping forward and moving forward and growing towards that relationship towards God.
Yeah. That's powerful.
Yeah.
So you're just sitting in there, some stranger's basement.
Yeah.
I was thinking, what the hell?
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like 7 days sober. Yeah. Like,
you don't know.
Yeah, Meemaw's bringing you her freaking casserole, and you're like, "What the fuck?
Yeah, what is going on?" And that one was a huge catalyst for me because, like I said, I didn't love myself, and to be able to sit there and be like, "Okay, like, if this is what there is out there, like these kind of like let's say relationships and stuff like that of like these people out there, because like I just felt like obviously like running and gunning with the people that I was around is such not real relationships. It's so like you're always on guard and all this. Like I can finally start letting my guard down a little bit." Felt like I still had it up. Like you said, the strongholds and everything else, like all that was still inside of me. But like I could start peeking over that wall and being like, what's on the other side? Like what is there on the other side?
I like that imagery, like Wilson from Home.
Yeah. And that was me. I was like, okay, like this, like, because you can't, even, you know, even if you're drowning in the walls, inside of the walls that you've built, that strength of that love, that unconditional love of that grace and that, like, that comes, like I said, from us having that relationship with God and being able to him to move through us and pour out onto
which
others.
Is what was happening with this family.
Yeah.
Right.
It shakes us to our core.
Invites. How many guys? Yeah. What, 10 guys maybe?
Yeah. Something? I mean, it was anybody. Like,
it was more than that. I was there too.
It could have been however many was there. They didn't care how many people were in that program. It was whoever was there could have came.
Is this a teen cake, folks?
No, this is, I believe it's a mom and daughter, Bernie and Jackie, and they own a salon, I think, and they're both hairstylists, and they would come, I think, once a month and give all the guys haircuts, because at that time, you couldn't go off campus to, like, the barber to get a haircut.
Uh-huh.
It was more insulated. That back when it was still a ministry, like when I went through. So they would come in, and they would cut everybody's hair.
Yeah. That's powerful, man. So you're just sitting there, and that's a little, just enough spark to keep you willing.
I was so blown away and moved by it that I was just like.
Okay. In contrast to your life 30 days before, right? Like, when we live in that environment, and that mindset, right? People are just a means to an end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, it's just, it comes with the territory. I mean, I was hanging out like birds of a feather flock together. I was hanging out with other people using. It's, what can I get from this person? Like, how can I wear this mask? How can I mean, yeah, like the true, like you were wired for that desire to have those relationships, but it's like, it's all false. It's all just all this lies and hanging out with them. And it's like, just waiting for the pin to drop of when is this person going to rip me off? When am I going to, you know, come down to like, I might say, yeah, we're cool. But like 30 seconds later, if it comes down to it and you're in between me and the drug, like yeah. It's the drug, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so
I had, you know, very similar experience too. And I think the amount of people that pour into No Longer Bound is profound, and it makes it very different. My experience in treatment before, I went to the same place twice, and I remember they put you all in the druggy buggy, you know, this big van that carries everybody from treatment out to meetings, outside meetings, and they would take us to this church in Jacksonville Beach, and I remember the bus parking and people getting off, and I remember just seeing all the people that were there just part like we were lepers, you know. And that was like that the stigma, you know, of addiction, even from people that were at a meeting, or maybe they were just at the church, but whoever they were, they parted. Mm-hmm. Like it was noticeable, and they were repelled by you.
Yeah.
And it's interesting at No Longer Bound how so many people embrace, you know, North Point Church has tons of small groups that come and consistently serve and bring game nights and bring meals and fellowship. And like Alex, you know, these people would come in and they're so nice. And I was very fresh too. I was probably 2 or 3 weeks in, and this husband and wife and their married group would come in and bring dinner maybe once a month. And the wife sat down with me and she was asking me all these questions. She was, you know, extremely interested, and I'm still very mistrusting at this point. And she's asking, you know, like, what are you working on in the program? And I was like, you know, I was told I need to be journaling about, you know, this relationship with my dad. And she's like, oh, okay, well, you know, I'm going to be praying for you. I hope that you allow yourself to go deep with it. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. Like, she doesn't care. She's just here so she can, like, you know, share on Facebook that she went and served, or tell her friends, and it's all about an image thing for her. And then she would come back the next month, and the next month. And she's like, how'd that go with your dad? How are things with your dad? I'm like, you remember that? And she's like, yeah, like, my family's been praying for you every night at dinner. I'm like, what? I was like, why?
That's weird.
Weird. Why would you love, you know, you love
You're
me?
You're praying
weird.
About me at your dinner?
And I was like, why? You know, I just was real with her one day when she asked, and I was like, why?
Yeah, why do you care?
Like, yeah, what does it matter to you?
Yeah.
She's like, well, we love you. And I'm like, you don't even know me. She's like, so? I'm like, what?
Yeah.
She's like, you didn't need to know people to hate them. And I was like, yeah. She's like, why do I need to know everything about you to love you? Mm. And I didn't have an answer for that. And like, I thought about that for like the next week, and I journaled about it and was like, man, that's like, this is a walking example of how God loves us.
Yeah.
It doesn't care about all these things you've done wrong. Doesn't care that you're not where you should be, or where you're expected to be, or where you thought you should be. He just loves you right where you're at.
Yeah.
With nothing to gain from doing it.
Right, yeah.
And that was very profound for me. And not to say that the staff doesn't love guys there the same way, but in my mistrusting mind up front, I'm like, well, they're paid to do it.
Yeah.
So it's different. It doesn't count.
Yeah.
And then these people that just donate their time and their love and their hearts and their food, let's be honest, they're really good food, opened that door for me to start seeing that in other people.
Yeah. Yeah, the little, just a little shift in the perspective.
Yeah. And that's very different than most treatment, I feel like.
Yeah.
At least in my experience.
So, Alex, lightning,
but Southern
Latin,
Lightning.
Yeah. Latin.
There it is.
Alex Lightning.
Yeah.
That's like a wrestling name, dog. That sounds like you're like a WWE or something. Like, yeah.
Oh, he could be, bro. Look, you know.
So, tell me about what was going on in your life that made you realize you needed to go to treatment. You needed to go take a time out from the world, and just kind of what led to that
moment of surrender, say, okay, I'll go somewhere?
Well, let's see. I've been living in my truck. I came down from Missouri, so I've been living in my truck for a little over a year, and that facing multiple felonies because, again, I'd burn all the bridges with my family. Most of them had set boundaries where, I mean, if I could sleep in their driveway or whatever, you know, when it got really, because Missouri gets pretty darn cold over the winter and stuff, like, but if I could sleep in the driveway, whatever, but when it came to money and all that other stuff, you know, I'd running around, stealing, it didn't matter who it was from, all sorts of stuff like that. So I was facing felonies, and again, jail time, again, the overwhelming sense of grief. I lost my fiance to this disease, to suicide in this disease, and I was actually the one that found her. Whatever the case is, all that grief, all that stuff leading up to that, and finally maybe sit there, and I just came to that realization of, like, I went the first step when they say that powerless, I was like, I finally admitted, like, when I tried to stop, because, you know, I went to, like, some 4-day, 72-hour detoxes up there trying to, and tried to go to a sober living up there, and which ended up everybody was just doing stuff there anyway, so, but all that stuff to realize, I was like, I came to the realization of my powerlessness. I was like, you know, I always told myself in my mind, I was like, I got this, yeah. And then trying to actually stop it myself, and I was like, why can't I go more than 72 hours on my own without getting high again?
Yeah.
And again, like I said, the fear of legal, you know, sitting there thinking of, yeah, just all the hopelessness, the despair, I mean, and the grief, the brokenness.
Yeah, so you have this moment of powerlessness, this realization. Mm-hmm. What do? Who do you call?
Well, I mean, you want to talk about God working in the ways that he does. My cousin that lives down here, I mean, he had been on my case for, on my case, he cared enough to try and come up, to try and reach out to me, to have me just move down here for, I want to say like a year, 2 years. He's just been saying, hey, you want to come down? Well, he was on his way up to Missouri, and through his girlfriend, saw one of his clients, actually, he has an insurance company up in State Farm up in Dahlonega area. Through one of his clients that he didn't even know had gone through No Longer Bound at that point in time, posted something about the wood shop or something. So through the grapevine, he saw this, and then he reached out and asked some other people that he didn't even know had sent their, this one gentleman in particular had sent his son there, asked about it, and he was on his way up for, I think it was Thanksgiving that year, and came up and talked to me about it and just put it in my ear. It was basically like a very, just like, hey, man, like, what are you doing? What do you need to do? You know, which the entire time I was sitting there, I was just like, dude, got $20 in my pocket. Stop talking to me about this stuff. I just want to go get high. But it sowed the seeds in my mind of like an option, an escape.
So this was before you had that realization, that conversation with him. The conversation with him about No Longer Bound was before you had that
moment. I mean, I had those lingering thoughts because, again, it's like I was at that desperation. I was at that desperation point of, like, the end of my rope where it's, like, legal stuff, just so tired of freaking waking up, like, freezing, like, all that stuff.
So he puts this in your ear, which you don't really receive well, mm-mm. Which he probably thinks is, oh, well, I tried, right? Yeah. And then you eventually have that moment of, like, okay. Yeah. I need to get help. Is that who you called, your cousin?
I actually ended up through that. I mean, ended up getting the number to reach out to No Longer Bound.
Oh, you did it yourself?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because, I mean, he said, hey, No Longer Bound, all this other stuff. And he put that up on the table. And then it was up to me at that point. And my family, like, after he put it in my ear, my mom, my dad, they were all, again, I say, on my case. At the time, it felt like they were on my case and for good reason. But about just being like, hey, just like trying to, you know, push that. And I finally, again, got in there, contacted No Longer Bound, and started, you know, I say reaching out and going through the process of at least contacting them.
Yeah. So, Adam, you and I have talked about this kind of stuff before, but that them putting up the boundary, right, and they stop his family, stopping, giving him money. Okay, you can sleep in the truck, in the driveway, you know. How important is that in your experience of helping families who have loved ones who are addicted to put up those kind of boundaries?
Oh my gosh, it's so important. Like, you know, we were talking about earlier, the guy and the family getting healing. I talk to, you know, my role now is doing outreach. I talk to families a lot. It's 9 times out of 10, it's, let's say 8 times out of 10, it's the mom calling me on behalf of the son, or the wife calling me on behalf of the husband or the sister or on behalf of the brother. And it's jarring for them to hear it sometimes, but I feel like I'm doing them a disservice if I don't tell them. It's like, look, if you really want to help him, stop helping him. Mm. The writing's been on the wall long enough where you can see all these things that you've been doing to help is not making the situation any better. If anything, it's prolonging it. It's enabling them to continue in this. And it's so counterintuitive, especially for women, because, you know, they love a different way than men do. Mm. And the world kind of influences that, where women's value from the world perspective, especially American culture, is the women's value is in how they look and their ability to be a parent. And then the men's value is, you know, how strong you are and your ability to be stoic and your ability to provide. Mm. That's what the world tells us, you know, where our value is. And so moms and wives have a very hard time setting those boundaries.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I was talking about this with somebody yesterday, that there's probably an ego involved in there, where it's like, if he's not doing well, that's a reflection of me and my parenting or my influence. And they internalize this and take responsibility.
Yeah.
When that's not necessarily the case. Like, and you do have some control in what you're allowing them to continue to do. But it's so counterintuitive for that. That's not what love is, right? Love always feels like sunshine and rainbows, and that's just not the case, you know?
Yeah. So setting up some sort of boundary, kind of like what, you know, Alex's family did for him, right?
And that's extremely difficult for people to do.
Yeah.
I usually say, like, love needs to look different depending on the situation of the person you're trying to love. Right, and if they're deep in addiction, usually loving them is not going to feel good for you. Mm. It probably shouldn't. If it feels good for you, it's probably hurting them.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. So creating...
Like, he's asking you for money, it makes you feel good to give him $20, but is that really what's best for him? I think love, and when somebody's deep in addiction, has to be really selfless. And it is the most hard thing for you to do, but you do it anyways because it's what's best for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, like in your situation, Alex, like not being given any money, not being given support other than the minimal kind of amount of, like, you could sleep in the
food,
driveway,
yeah,
and some food,
water, yeah,
and water, yeah. It kind of forced you to face the reality of your situation, right?
Yeah, it was definitely part of the wake-up call.
Yeah,
like I said, because, I mean, if I'm honest, I mean, I joke around with my oldest sister, where, you know, she ordered me Domino's, and we have this running joke between ourselves where I still able to take that Domino's and go trade it for a sack, and I told her that after, you know, I got in recovery, and we laughed about it and stuff. But
did you trade pizza for dope?
I was able to go trade pizza for
no snap.
I know, yeah, but whatever the case is, anyway,
that's gang, dog.
Yeah,
you got,
right.
Some,
yeah,
got some game, yeah. Bro.
Smooth, dude.
Yeah. So whatever the case is, yeah, I mean, I could have
opportunist.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, just cruise on over. I got that supreme pizza, y'all. Come on, hold up. I know you ain't ate in 5 days. I know you want this. But anyhow, yeah, I mean, but it was a way. I mean, that was definitely the lead up. The wake
I traded
up call.
Bagels for heroin once.
No way.
Everything, yeah. Bagels.
Yeah, it was like day old bagels. Yeah. Even, yeah.
Throw them in the microwave for 5 seconds.
You're yeah, good. Yeah. You're
good. You didn't tell them that though. That wasn't a selling point.
No, I was like,
they're aged,
aged to perfection. Yeah. Never mind that. Here you go. But yeah.
So you get on the phone with No Longer Bound, and they start walking you through the admin process, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're explanative of that, but I mean, the one thing that I see now that they did was they really put it in your hands, because, I mean, it's more of a, like, how bad do you want it type thing, essay type thing, but it's more of a how bad do you want it, because they're very... at least with me, when I was interacting with them, it was, hey, okay, this you want to hear? Here's the application. This is what we need, da-da, and go from there type process, and you know, and walking me through. Yes, they, you know, they asked me the overall, you know, questionnaires and stuff to kind of get a feel of read of where I was at. You know, I say the, I don't want to say clinical questions, but like, hey, like, how often do you use, like, getting a baseline on me, baseline questions of seeing where I was at, of like, you know, where all this other stuff of that I was going through.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
it was really left in my hands, which I see is, I don't know if that's part of what they do. I feel like if I remember right, that's kind of part of it, seeing like how bad does this person want it? Because I mean, that's one of the things of, you know, so many people get pushed into these programs by family and stuff like that, but ultimately it's leaving it up to the person to do it themselves, because
nobody else can want it for you.
Yeah, because right. I mean, the best analogy that I've used before in seeing people is like, you're kind of like, I say a liquid, where like you form to the container you're in, but if you take that away, they just kind of out. Yeah. But like, you know, until I genuinely like, if you don't want something, then you're not going to do it, or if you do, it's going to be half-hearted, and just realizing that genuine desire. And I say I was half-hearted at that point in time. It was more like, this is an escape and all this other stuff. But, I mean, I came to that acceptance of like, okay, like, let's forget about God, because I knew it was a 12-month, like a year. I was like, whatever, a year, God, whatever, with God, you know what I mean? Like, all that stuff out the window. Like, let's just do this thing. So, yeah, like, I mean.
Yeah, and you were facing some time.
Yeah.
So you probably felt like, if I go into treatment, yeah, I was told that good too. Yes. On my
a year long,
cord or whatever. Yeah.
Very much
and that
so.
Process has changed a little bit. Like, I liken like the old school, because the admissions was still more towards like the ministry side of things, where I liken it to like a sponsor in 12 steps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get the nerve up and the desperation in a moment to ask somebody to be your sponsor. But for any kind of sustained recovery, you need to like maintain that level of desperation. And so the sponsor is going to be like, okay, yeah, I'll be your sponsor. Call me every day at 10:02 a.m.
Yeah.
Just to assess your level of willingness to follow through with basic stuff. And, I mean, nobody comes to No Longer Bound for their first treatment. Very few people do.
Mm.
Because the level, the level of commitment, very few people. The level of commitment is, it's a lot.
And well, a year is a long time.
Right.
Right.
That's way longer than most programs. It's way deeper than most programs.
Yeah.
There's just a lot more asked than normal treatment centers.
Yeah.
And so that willingness in the person trying to get in needs to kind of match that to maintain a healthy culture. Yeah. People that are desperate. You know, the only cure for addiction that I know of is suffering.
Mm.
And trying to really discern, has this person experienced enough suffering where they're willing to do these things we're going to ask?
Yeah.
It's like, people don't change until change becomes easier than staying the same.
Yeah. Well, the idea of a year, I mean, that's a long time. But it also, like, if you think about anybody I know who have seen get a year, regardless of the means, so much transformation happens in that year.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, of course, anyone can choose to live, go back anytime, right? But when someone gets a year, there's a level of kind of like foundation that kind of gets built, right? And so, but also the other side of a year-long process, that's significant, right? Like you're not, the chances of like, if you owned a home and or, you know, your credit score, like your bank accounts, like all those kind of things, if you disappear for a year, that a lot of that stuff is a, you got to find a way to manage that, or how do you handle that? What do you do with that? All that kind of stuff, you know? So a year long is pretty.
Yeah.
But there's generally a reason why it's a year, right?
And generally for the guys that are coming to the program,
they ain't got none of that.
No, a lot of them do. But chances are, if they don't come into this year long program, they're going to lose it all anyways. If their addiction continues to play out, and maybe they pay the ultimate cost and they die. I mean, especially with fentanyl today, like, people don't last in addiction as long as they used to.
Yeah.
You know, it's real out there.
So you're going through this process of admin, and then they tell you, what do they, like, put a number on a piece of paper and slide it over the desk?
No, it wasn't even like that. There was, because Brooke,
I got a number for you right here. Mm-hmm.
Or not. Okay. Or, no, I mean Morgan, not Brooke. Morgan.
Yeah, Morgan. Yes.
Morgan was doing my intake stuff, and she was just like, yeah, so the cost of the program is $15,000. And I was like, excuse me? That's like I said earlier, I was like, man, I can't even keep $15 in my pocket for 10 minutes before going and spending this stuff. So, yeah, I mean, they were very upfront with the cost of the program and everything like that. And
but, like, for you, like, you hear that. Is it discouraging? Are you at this point? I mean gotta be
tough
to hear.
It was, because I was just like, well, I mean, that was cool. I mean, I filled out all the paperwork. I did the stuff. But, you know what I mean? Like, even if I sold the truck that I lived in, which was pretty beat up at that point in time and completely ragged out, I mean, like, I couldn't, you know, come up with probably not even a quarter of that. And I had no cash in my name, and I burned all the bridges with my family.
Yeah. So again, what'd you do, like, at that point? Did you ask for help, or?
I mean, well, they said, because that's why I said, I asked him, I was like, is there, I mean, any other way? Because I kind of laughed at it. I was like, I don't have anything. Like, I got the truck that I'm in and the clothes on my back and whatever. I was like, but, dude, I have no relate. Like, everything is burning there. Like, I mean, they talked about the scholarship thing, but also about wanting me to go and see how much I could round up myself. And that's where, I mean, I did. I went to my family and went to and started talking to them and saying, like, this is the case with it. I mean, I couldn't come close. You know, I have no money and all this other stuff, which is, again, going to them and talking to them and actually, you know, saying, like, this is what I want to do. But also on the other side of that, I mean, in the back of their minds, I could see they're like, yeah, I mean, are you sure? Like, because I flip-flopped so many times before in the sense of, you know, being a master manipulator in our addiction. I mean, I was of, you know, they take me at, is this actually, you know, something that he wants to do? But thankfully, I mean, with that, I was able to get some family members to
put up something.
Yeah, put up something. And then through that, say, hey, this is all I could get together.
Yeah.
Say all I could get, but all that was able to get together and go to them with that.
Yeah. And so then they scholarship the rest of the amount.
A very good portion of it.
And then, you know, when we're talking about it, like $15,000 sounds like a lot of money. It is a lot of money.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, over a course of a year, it's really only, you know, like $1,200 a month for, you know, two therapy sessions, housing, food, group sessions. I mean, and all the other things that go in. So it still is a ministry, right, in that way, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because $1,200 is not covering the cost to treat an individual per month, or $15,000 isn't covering the cost to treat a person for a year.
Yeah, the excess was always fundraised for to cover, because $15,000 doesn't cover the cost of somebody being there for a year. It costs us more than that.
Yeah, I bet.
But that was what we asked for, you know, kind of to have people have some skin in the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, I remember talking with our executive director about that, and it's like, you know, majority of the times it's not their skin. It's somebody else's skin.
Yeah.
It's a family member relationship that's already strained or broken, and that, you know, you add money into that, it furthers that. And so it's awesome that we're, you know, I talked about, like, the volunteer support and influence there. That's not just in time. You know, like, people give time, talent, treasure. The treasure part is huge. Like, we're so well supported by the community, either through shopping at our thrift stores, which we use to generate revenue, and our Cars for Recovery, which we use to generate revenue. The rest is donations.
Yeah.
And that's put us in a position now, where if somebody is a good fit for the program and they want it, we will never say no to them for an inability to pay.
Wow.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
Because I could say all the nice things in the world about No Longer Bound, but money talks.
Yeah.
You know, and to say that we can do that for potentially 100% of the people in the program is amazing.
Yeah.
Like, you just don't see that kind of benevolence in this industry. You don't.
Yeah.
That was I wish we did more, but.
Yeah, because that was also one of the first sighs of relief that I had. I mean, it was whenever I got the phone call back saying, okay, we're gonna cover the rest of it, and, you know, then moving forward with the intake process of setting the dates and everything like that.
Yeah. So how long do you have till you get in at that point? You got a week, a couple days?
I could have honestly gone like that if I wanted to, but me being a
I got some things I got to take care of.
You know, you come up with
this. I'm not done yet.
Hold on.
I got a cat at home that, you know, I can't leave alone. That's cool, you know, got to find someone to watch it.
Yeah, all this stuff.
That's not a cat. That's a dog, dude. You don't know what you have at the house.
But
I thought he barked weird.
Yeah, so.
Freaking parrot, bro.
That I ended up saying, okay, like, I'm trying to think when it was at all. I think it was, like, sometime in, like, November. I feel like November, I think it was, whenever, like, it finalized everything, that the scholarship was good to go.
Oh.
And I was like, yeah.
So you held out for another whole month.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, I'll make it there.
Now, so this month, are you running as hard as possible, getting as much drugs in your system as you can?
Yeah.
Because you know it's coming to an end?
Yeah. And not just that, but again, monopolizing on the fact that my family knows that I'm going, so they let those boundaries slide a little bit. And that was, again, almost a not good thing, because like Adam was talking about, and with maintaining those, because at that one point it's kind of like you start getting into like, oh, I could ride this out for a little bit longer, you know what I mean? Like dragging your feeling, maybe ride this out for a little bit.
But that's the insanity.
Yeah.
That's the insanity. Yeah. Is like, here's the solution. You can have it now whenever you decide to show up.
But let's
prolong my suffering more.
Because I got stuff I need to do. And it's like, in retrospect, it's like all the things I thought I had to do and all the things like I just, and I see this with, again, just an observation I've made being in recovery and with other people who are sick and suffering and stuff. Like, you grab onto these things that you just like fixate on, that you got to take care of, all this stuff, and you like make a mountain out of it. And I was doing the same thing of all these things I did, and it's like, really, I had nothing. Like, I walked away from everything that I say everything, the little bit that I had, the trucks or whatever else, walked away from it all. And all it took was getting on a, you know, taking a 3-hour ride and getting on a plane and going down there. And, you know, besides one bag of clothes that I had and a pillow.
Yeah. That's interesting too, to wait the whole month, right? Like, the perception is like stopping doing all this and entering into sobriety and recovery is going to be like slavery. It's going to be terrible. It's going to suck so bad.
No. And it's put yourself as long as possible.
Dude, I found more peace in that relationship with God that I was introduced to at No Longer Bound than I ever did in a pill or a drug or alcohol. You know,
but that's the thing.
That peace, like, I was looking for in those areas is what I actually found in God in this recovery process.
Yeah. But there's just something to it, man. It's like that, the receiving of that, receiving love, receiving grace is much harder to do than it is to say, right? Like, to really, truly receive it, right? And it takes so much time, because I still feel like I'm awakening to my ability to receive God's love and grace, right? Like, there's still parts of my life where I'm like, I'll come to a realization, I'll go, man, I've been fighting for this thing and I didn't need to fight. Like, that's how good God is. But there's something in me that doesn't want to receive it. I don't want to accept it. You know, whatever it is, guilt, shame, trauma, human nature, whatever, sin nature, whatever, something doesn't want to receive that. Right. And I think the addict, we're just the extreme version of that. Right. Yeah.
I don't think I was ever like those volunteers, that lady that kept asking me about my dad and this letter I didn't want to write. And she kind of like opened this crack that made me dig in more with this relationship with God. And I think until I was able to receive those things from him, grace, forgiveness, and him understanding exactly where I'm at, I can't hide anything from him. And I know that. I had this belief already that he knows everything. Mm-hmm. He's watching me, you know, shaking his face. And the reality,
he knows, like, when you've been naughty.
Right, exactly.
He knows when you've been nice.
Exactly. I'm on the naughty list for sure, and he knows it, and I don't want to be around him. But bringing all of that to him anyways and just receiving the same amount of love and encouragement and support and grace and forgiveness allowed me, like, when I could co-sign to that, genuinely in my heart, co-sign to that.
Yeah.
That God sees me this way, that I could see myself that way, and I could start to receive when other people saw me that way.
Yeah. And then
prior to that, I'm like, ooh, yeah, I know you think that.
Yeah.
I know you think, you know, I'm a good person, but you don't know the real me.
Yeah. But eventually then you start seeing other people in that way.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Then you can give and receive it. Yeah. But first you have to receive it, and it's, you know, God, our only job in that relationship is to receive it. We don't have to work for it or earn it or deserve it. Our job is just to receive it and position ourselves to align ourselves to be in constant reception. He's just throwing the ball. We're just catching it.
Yeah.
Then we can play catch with somebody else, you know, give and receive.
So now, at this point in your life, or as we land the plane, that's a podcast for... We're ending the show. We're wrapping it up. What's a day in your life like now? How long have you maintained recovery? And what have you gotten out of life since leaving the bound?
So
Yeah.
Got there December 20th, 2019, finished the program. So I'm coming up on just under four years of sobriety.
Yeah.
No drugs, no alcohol, no cigarettes. Yeah. And what I've gotten out of life, I mean, you know, I could sit there and talk about, I mean, the fact that being able to chase after a career, a passion, like finding my passions and everything like that, and being able to get out, and Adam actually turned me on to, you know, I was in the auto shop and got my hands, you know, on that and found a passion for that, being able to step out, and Adam set me up with Christian Brothers, is who I work for now, and been able to go and actually chase after long-term goals of becoming, you know, master certified mechanic and all this stuff, and, you know, again, house, like all, like being able to live, you know, all this stuff, you know, the fundamentals. But I mean, what I focus on is not necessarily that, but what I have now in my life is authentic relationships, restored relationships. I mean, the relationships with my family, going, being able to go make amends with them, and actually be present and like just live freely, the happy, the joyous, you know, they say the happy joy is free, all the promises coming true, like all the things that I could have never imagined. And it's like, you know, being able to be present and actually not just be there, but to interact with these people and see the impact that I make on their lives and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And have that is, I mean, and while maintaining that constant communication, that daily walk, that friendship with God, with Christ, with the Holy Spirit, like being able to do that and being able to get myself out of the way, because yeah. I show up and, you know, as addicts, we're freaking selfish. I mean, we are self-centered. I mean, to see the ways that, again, that God has been able to work in my life, work through me, where I can put myself out of the way, I can show up, and I can give back. I could be of service. I can, like, be at the gym working out, and God's like, hey, like, this person's going to talk to you. Like, just moments like that, like, being able to, like, stop. You know, someone might be so caught up, I'm like, nah, I'm just trying to work out, or I'm mm-hmm. trying to, I got stuff to do. It's like, I can press pause and listen to those moments where the Holy Spirit's speaking to me to, like, to move and be there for another person, another addict. I've ran into so many people that aren't addicts, just to be able to be there and be present and have these real talks. Because, I mean, it's like, it just doesn't happen that much in the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
to be able to be there and do that is what I have now. I mean, that, the family that I found, because, you know, being able to actually experience that, you know, that family of faith, you know what I mean? Like, again, I'm going tomorrow with my friend James. I see friend, they're family now, I consider them that, but like going over there and hanging out with them, you know, because I don't, besides my cousin, I don't have any family down here. All my family lives out of state. Well, I take that back, my nieces moved down here, but yeah, like with all that, being able to be there, be present, and like not have transactional relationships, like true, authentic, where I could be there fully known, you know, not just like, and I even talked about this in a meeting the other day where God has showed me where, like, not that I ever took for granted this fact in recovery, but the fact that I have so many relationships now that I can go to with my guard down.
Yeah.
And that's just, it blows me away. Like it's day in and day out, I'm grateful for that, to be able to be that kind of person, to live like we're called to live. You know what I mean? To walk that yeah. out.
So it sounds like after the bound, you got into the steps.
Yeah. And that's a cool thing. You know, you kind of touched on it of, the cool take is that I'd never done AA or anything like that before, so they do work. It's kind of oriented, built around that, and the way that the program is, it kind of goes through those similar things. But to be able to go out, and they encourage us once we get in transition to step out mm-hmm. and to get a sponsor, to all this other stuff. That was at least for me, I think it's the same still, to go out and do that. And I found working the 12-step through AA, it gave me a whole nother perspective on, again, you can never have too many handles in my mind. In my opinion, too many handles on what's inside of us, what's going on, to identify that. Because used to just be grabbing in the dark. You know, I didn't know. And I learned what those handles were at the bound inside
of myself.
Did
you get right into the steps after the bound, or did you
I
take
did.
Some time
yeah.
off?
Actually, again, God moment of going and going to Tea and Cake. You know, you talked about Tea and Cake, Mark Lewington. I love them. Their family, too.
Yeah.
Shout out to them if they're watching this. But anyway, going over there. Again, just those God moments of, hey, by the way, you like cars. I got somebody that does cars and ended up finding a sponsor and working the steps with him who, again, they say find someone who has what you want. Well, again, he had a shop in the back of his, did racing, built his own race car, all this other stuff, but like went and worked the steps with him, went through it that way.
And then now, you weren't burned out? You didn't feel burned out on self-exploration and growing at that point? Like, what kept you moving forward in that?
That's a good question.
Well, getting into transition, there's like there was a bit of that lapse because it's like, okay, you're so, regimented, but you've got the structure and everything of the program. You get into transition, and that's honestly why, one of the reasons why I'm grateful that it was there, because it goes from, I had no self-regulation in the past, and it's like, okay, like, we spend, at least for me, the 10 months of da-da-da-da, like, this is what I need to do.
Yeah, planned, everything. And this is when you eat, this is when you go
and
to
us
bed.
And it's all good, it's great, the talking about, like, hey, this is what, and, you know, the recovery, relapse prevention, all this stuff, like, okay, I know what I need to do. Well, when the rubber meets the road, and, like, I talk about this with one of the guys in the program that I'm actually a mentor for, but, like, it's kind of like, imagine like a current of the water, like you're in the program and it kind of feels like you're at not a standstill, but while you're there, you're just like going slow. The best analogy I can use, then you hop back into the current of life and it's like, woo. And so in that, being able to take that time to work on those, just self-care, you know, again, just self-care of like working out or just finding those healthier, you know, healthy ways to not medicate or anything on, but all that to carry forward. So being burnt out on that, I mean, honestly, I'm glad that they encouraged it, because if I'm being honest, I don't know if I necessarily would have sought it out at first. So I'm very grateful that Adam implemented that, because, again, he was a transition counselor at the time and was like, hey, you know, working on all that stuff, that was what they wanted us to do. Because, again, the community is wonderful when it comes to No Longer Bound, but I think there's a very big importance in stepping out and stepping into different circles to get out there.
Yeah. So you just kept pushing.
Yeah.
So I can imagine, like, the steps are amazing framework for any kind of transformation.
Yeah, great standard for living. I mean, you just want to live
and
like standard, that.
Yeah. And so for you to come out of a year long, you know, or 10 months long of really deep dive and self-work and self-exploration and a connection to a higher power, I can imagine those steps really came alive to you at that time, because you were, seemed like you maybe were prepped for that.
Yes. I mean, dude, primed in the sense of working on doing those deep dives of like handling, again, with the clinical aspect of it, of like really the clinical and then the counselor, everything all encompassed, working on the bulk amount of trauma. And then, because once I got done with the program, I mean, I'll be, again, completely transparent. Dude, until I was almost 3 years sober, I didn't have sober off drugs and alcohol, I didn't get emotional sobriety, you know what they talk about. Uh-huh. So, like, I still had so many things going on, but it primed me to where, like, okay, like, I'm a very regimented person in the sense of, like, I can almost be borderline compulsive, obviously, like as some addicts are, but it's like setting the framework of journaling, the meditation, the day, like those were like getting all that set. Cause again, the prayer, the meditation, the journaling, which I do, I pretty much done every single day. I mean, I might miss some here or there, but since I've been in the program, worked on getting all that stuff set up, crafting the tools that I use on a daily basis. And then again, I mean, I'm a mechanic. I can use that analogy of like, you keep accruing those tools and not just, okay, I can buy the tool, but how to put it into practice. Yeah. I mean, that's the one thing is like, you can go out and buy all the, you get all the tools or whatever think, you know, but when it comes to like, okay, like the thought processes of, oh man, that like that abstract thinking of this is where I can put this tool to use and then putting the rubber to the road.
Yeah. Tools for living. Yeah. That's what it is really. Right.
Yeah.
All right. Any, parting thoughts? Any, what did Jerry Springer used to say? Mm-hmm. What did he say?
Oh, man, I don't know.
What was his last? What was Jerry? Final thoughts.
Final thoughts.
It was Jerry Springer's final thoughts. So what are Adam Miller's final thoughts as we end the podcast?
My final thoughts is ways I can be available to anybody that's listening or heard something and is interested in No Longer Bound. Shoot me an email, adam.miller@nolongerbound.com. I would love to help you or your loved one either get into No Longer Bound, or if we're not an appropriate fit, help them find somewhere that is. Because, again, we're not profiting off of people that come in. We do it because, you know, we want to help and we want to be good stewards with what we've been given. And I know that that helps me to give away what I've been given.
Yeah.
So there's a selfish motive in there too.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I'm happy to help.
Adam.miller at
nolongerbound.com.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening to The Most High Show. And thank you for everybody for being here and hanging out.